News. I'm Jim Bertel. North Korea says it has conducted another test at a satellite launch site to bolster its strategic nuclear deterrence. VOA's Bill Gallo has more from Seoul.
North Korea gave few details about its Saturday afternoon test, which occurred at a satellite launch facility. It's the same site where the North last week conducted what analysts say was a rocket engine test. North Korea appears to be preparing for a test of a long-range missile or satellite launch vehicle, both of which would likely use ballistic missile technology. North Korea has given the U.S. until the end of the year to drop what it says is its hostile policy. U.S. President Donald Trump has ignored the North Korean deadline. He's also slowly ramped up rhetoric against the North, recently referring to North Korean leader Kim Jong-un as Rocket Man. Bill Gallo, VOA News, Seoul.
New Zealand divers searched contaminated waters near the volcanic White Island for two remaining bodies on Saturday. Reuters' Lauren Anthony reports.
New Zealand divers searched for two remaining bodies on Saturday near the site of a volcano eruption on the uninhabited White Island. The death toll from Monday's disaster has now risen to at least 15. And more than two dozen people are still hospitalized, most with extreme burns injuries. The remains of six people were successfully recovered on Friday after a military team in gas masks and hazmat suits landed on White Island. The White Island volcano is a popular tourist destination for day trippers. There has been criticism that tourists were allowed on the island at all, given signs of increasing tremor activity in the days before the eruption.
That is Reuters' Lauren Anthony reporting. A Congolese city at the center of the Ebola epidemic has come under attack from rebels, leaving at least six people dead. The attack comes just days after Congo's military began stepping up its efforts to fight armed groups in the area. For more news, go to voanews.com. This is VOA News. A court in Sudan convicted former President Omar al-Bashir of money laundering and corruption on Saturday, sentencing him to 2 years in a rehabilitation facility. VOA's Tommy McNeil has more.
This is the first verdict in a series of legal proceedings against al-Bashir, who was also wanted by the International Criminal Court on charges of war crimes and genocide linked to the Darfur conflict in the 2000s. The verdict came a year after Sudanese protesters first began their revolt against al-Bashir's authoritarian rule. During his 3 decades in power, Sudan landed on the U.S. list for sponsoring terrorism, and the country's economy has been battered by years of mismanagement and American sanctions. Al-Bashir has been in custody since April, when Sudan's military stepped in and removed him from power after months of nationwide protest. The uprisings eventually forced the military into a power-sharing agreement with civilians. Tommy McNeil, VOA News, Washington.
British Prime Minister Boris Johnson traveled to the northern part of the country Saturday to thank voters for backing his Conservative Party. Later, he made it clear his number one priority is getting Brexit done.
We've had 3.5 years of wrangling, particularly about Brexit. It's time for us as a country to move on. And it's time for us to come together and deliver on our One Nation agenda. That's what I want to do.
Johnson won a majority of 80 seats, his party's biggest election win in 30 years. China's top diplomat says the Phase 1 trade agreement is good news for both China and the United States. VOA's Steve Herman has more.
Trump calls the agreement phenomenal, telling reporters America's farmers will have to buy larger tractors because agricultural purchases by China very soon will total $50 billion.
It's going to ultimately lead to the opening of China.
Some Democratic lawmakers are criticizing the agreement, saying China is not making any hard commitments to structural reform. Author and commentator Gordon Chang sees history repeating itself.
Here we go again, trading real things for promises the Chinese will just dishonor.
China's government says Trump should now roll back some of the tariffs on $360 billion worth of Chinese goods. Steve Herman, VOA News, at the White House.
The UN climate talks appear to be in trouble. Countries remain deadlocked in talks over combating climate change. Alden Meyer from the Union of Concerned Scientists says he's not happy with the current proposals.
Never have I seen the almost total disconnection we've seen here at COP25 in Madrid between what the science requires and the people of the world demand and what the climate negotiators are delivering in terms of meaningful action. The planet is on fire, and our window of escape is getting harder and harder to reach the longer we fail to act.
For more news, download the VOA mobile app. In Washington, I'm Jim Bertel, VOA News.
and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington, D.C.
All people who have participated in all crimes must be taken to court, but according to law. All the decisions will be according to law.
A court sentences former Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir to 2 years of house arrest.
According to my own observation, there is a lot of negativity by the state and some of the leaders towards human rights. That's why they have even gone to the level of thinking that the best way is to withdraw from some of the regional international human rights mechanisms.
A Tanzanian human rights activist says respect for human rights appears to be declining.
The armed groups that are operating here in Uganda and are getting support, we have discussed and we have provided information, we have provided names. We have also addressed the issue of Rwandans who were arbitrarily arrested and illegally detained and also tortured in this country.
And Ugandan and Rwandan officials failed to reach an agreement on contentious issues. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. A prominent Sudanese activist has welcomed a court ruling which orders former President Omar al-Bashir to be placed in a reform facility for 2 years. Nahid Jabrala says she will continue with her efforts to ensure that the demands of the revolution which toppled the former president are fully addressed. Her comments come after a court sentenced former President Omar al-Bashir to 2 years under house arrest for corruption. However, attorneys for the former president say they plan to appeal to the ruling. For reaction to the court's ruling, I reached Nahid Jabrala in the Sudanese capital, Khartoum.
It is important that he was found guilty. This is what is important for me, and that is we will go the long road for justice. I'm happy, and I feel the responsibility to continue for democratic transformation, a real democratic transformation, and to achieve all our goals, the goals of the revolution, which you paid very high price for it. The blood and the souls of our young people of the Sudanese throughout 30 years.
I understand you've spoken to some of your friends and activists and civil society groups. What has been their reaction as well when you heard the news?
Most of the people feel that this is not fair, just 2 years. But for me, I think legally it is justified. And still we have the cases of the killings and murders and where he will not find a way out to run away with 2 years or such slight or nice decision.
Some Sudanese are saying that former President Salva Kiir should be sent to the International Criminal Court for war crimes and crimes against humanity allegedly his administration committed in Darfur. What is your position on that?
Of course, we are supporting taking al-Bashir to the ICC, and it will be a fight because now the military groups is not going for that. And I think this is because they are also committed the crimes and still committing crimes in Darfur and in other areas of Sudan. And at the international level, we'll fight for taking al-Bashir and all the criminals to the ICC because this is what we went out for, and we want justice for Darfurian people, for Sudanese people all over Sudan.
Now, some people are suggesting that you and other women activists who protested and demanded the fall of President Bashir's government feel vindicated because now he's facing or he's being prosecuted for his alleged wrongdoings, including this particular house arrest he's been placed under for 2 years by the court. What do you say to that?
I think we have to sit down to see all the options, and we have to be more strong, and we have to organize ourselves. All people who passed through the detention and the cold cells and the torture, of course, we have our very personal feeling of revenge or whatever, but it is a matter of justice, and we have a very hard and difficult duty regarding this. I think the system of justice has to be revised, and we are bound by laws that have been set by al-Bashir himself, and although these laws, by these laws, people over 70 were killed. Mahmoud Mohammed Taha was killed during the Mary regime, and now later al-Bashir made laws that would protect him, and I think he was clever because he knew what will happen, and he will make use of these strange laws.
Some are suggesting in Sudan that all other people who worked in President Bashir's government should face similar charges, and they should not be let go, and that they should be prosecuted for the wrongs they did while in government. Do you support that stance?
Yeah.
Why?
All people who had participated in all crimes must be taken to court, but according to law. All the decisions will be according to law.
Nahi Jabrala is a prominent Sudanese activist. She spoke with me from Khartoum. The national coordinator for the Tanzanian Human Rights Defenders Coalition says respect for human rights in the East African country appears to be declining fast. Onesmo Olengurumwa says the decision to withdraw the right of individuals and NGOs to file cases against the government at the Arusha-based African Court on Human and People's Rights is unfortunate and regrettable. This after Augustine Mahiga, the Constitutional and Legal Affairs Minister, said the country will adhere to international human rights protocols that do not contravene Tanzania's constitution and cultural norms. For reaction to the minister's statement, I reach Onesmo Olengurumwa.
My first question to him is that what protocol so far that did we ratify or sign that contravene our constitutional provisions or norms? And then secondly, if at all the answer will be the recently movement to withdraw from the declaration of the protocol that establishing the African Court on Human and People's Rights, that they are trying to term it as the protocol that violates constitutional rights and norms of this country, then as a country, we will be lying.
Does the decision to withdraw affects or undermines the work being done by non-governmental organizations or human rights groups in Tanzania?
Obviously, absolutely. Tanzania individuals have been accepting this court. Almost 50% of the cases in this court are coming from this country. And we take advantage that the court is physically located in this country. And this is what actually, of course, made the number of cases in that court, Tanzania, to be the leading. Now, if you deny the people of this country and the other people of Africa to access the court, what will be the meaning of the court?
Some Tanzanians are saying NGOs and human rights defenders in Tanzania are being allowed to freely operate without any hindrance. So your criticism of the government on human rights issues are neither here nor there. How do you react to that?
We are not given that cooperation to the level that is quite satisfactory. Because when we're talking about CSOs and human rights defenders freely working environment, we look at a number of issues, not only being registered, but also we look at to what extent are we involved, integrated in various key issues in the country, to what extent laws and policies that are developed or enacted today create or open up the space for human rights defenders and civil society to operate freely without having too much to do with laws, compliance, and again, to what extent are we allowed to also access regional and international human rights mechanisms such as that court that we are currently going to be denied to access. So you can see that despite the fact that there's that kind of say that there is that free environment. At the end, we who operate in Tanzania right now, and we've been also operating in another context before this regime. So we see that there's some shift. That kind of autonomy, that kind of freedom we used to enjoy at some point, is now disappearing.
How would you rate the current situation of the respect of human rights in Tanzania?
The problem is that if you look at the country as a country, for we human rights activists, not only activists, but also experts in the area of human rights, for a country to be doing well, to be said that it's doing well in terms of human rights, you look at a number of issues. First of all, how does the state, I mean the leaders and the people in power, view issues of human rights, view human rights as one of the pillars of democracy, as one of the pillars of development, and sort of fly, so to say? How do they view? Actually, according to my own observation, there is a lot of negativity by the state and some of the leaders towards human rights. That's why they have even gone to the level of thinking that the best way is to withdraw from some of the regional international human rights mechanisms. This is actually derived or pushed by this kind of perception towards human rights. That's one way of rating the level of human rights in any country. If we have leaders who have a certain negative perception towards human rights, then automatically other measures or criteria that we're going to use will automatically lead you to that direction. That if people who have that role, according to the national principles, to fulfill, to respect and protect human rights, have that kind of perception toward human rights, what then do you expect will be the situation on the ground? Automatically, the situation will be hard. And that's what we now enjoy in the country in terms of human rights, that we have a very difficult environment when it comes to issues related to human rights.
Onesmo Olengurumwa is the national coordinator for the Tanzanian Human Rights Defenders Coalition. He spoke with me from Dar es Salaam. Ugandan and Rwandan officials have failed to reach an agreement on most of the contentious issues between them after 8 hours in a closed-door meeting. The matters have now been referred back to their respective heads of state. From VOA, Halima Atumani reports from the Ugandan capital, Kampala.
The agenda of the meeting had been set. Officials would discuss the most contentious issues between the two countries: mutual allegations of destabilizing and subversive actions, protection of the rights and freedoms of each other's nationals, and resumption of cross-border activities. However, the meeting produced no consensus. Rwanda Foreign Affairs Minister Olivier Nduhungirehe listed actions Rwanda believes are the toxic core of the crisis.
The armed groups that are operating here in Uganda and are getting support, we have discussed and we have provided information. We have provided names. We have also addressed the issue of Rwandans who were arbitrarily arrested and illegally detained and also tortured in this country.
Uganda's Foreign Minister Sam Kutesa responded with Uganda's list of contentious issues while denying some of the allegations raised by Rwanda.
Issues like attempts to infiltrate our security agencies, issues like the closure of the border by Rwanda. We also talked about Rwandans who have been arrested here for illegal activities and some of them deported. For Uganda, clearly, we shall never support any force destabilizes or intends to destabilize our neighbors, including Rwanda.
While Rwanda expressed hope that the issues can be resolved in good faith and goodwill, Uganda said it hoped for truth and trust. The presidents of Rwanda and Uganda signed a memorandum of understanding in August in Angola, in which they agreed to work toward a ceasefire along their mutual border. Saturday's meeting was overseen by officials from the DR Congo and Angola, led by Angola's Foreign Affairs Minister Manuel Domingos Augusto, who was hopeful the crisis will be resolved.
We are confident that our two sister countries have all the necessary conditions to make this dialogue a success story, given the important role that both countries have in the geopolitical balance of the sub-region.
The foreign ministers agreed to pass the issues to Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni and Rwandan President Paul Kagame to decide and find a way forward. Halima Athmani for VOA News, Kampala, Uganda.
A Nigerian High Court has ordered the police and other security operatives not to arrest attorney Ifeanyi Ejiofor. The police had declared the lawyer wanted over attacks of police officers. Local media say the violence led to the death of two police officers who wanted to question him about the murders. In reaction to what he described as an invasion by the police, the lawyer petitioned the court for over $5 million in damages. Attorney Ejiofor went into hiding after the police declared that they wanted him for questioning. For more reaction about the court ruling, I reach attorney Ifeanyi Ejiofor in Akwa, Anambra State in Nigeria.
Apparently, I'm already out of my hiding. But you know, Nigeria is a country where there's no respect for rule of law. Police does anything they wish they want. The enforcement of this order court made yesterday is on the hands of the citizens, the youth of Anambra State and also entire Anambra State citizens. Because Anambrians are very angry with development in my house. So they're ready to enforce the order to the letter. So I'm out from my hiding place. I'm walking the street, but I have to be careful. The fact that I'm out of the hiding, because the court made it clear yesterday that nobody should tamper with me. The city school should be maintained, which neutralized the police public notice declaring me wanted. So that has been settled. So let's come to the court. And the court wasn't happy because the court was very furious about the level of destruction in my house, as shown in the video clips and also pictorial evidence presented before the court. So let them come to the court and also explain why such things should take place in my house. In a lawyer's house, a lawyer's of international repute, well respected across the world.
So what's next for you? Are you still going to pursue the case of the leader of EPOB, Nnamdi Kanu, for which some suspect that you nearly got into trouble for with the authorities?
The point is that I am not negging. I've said it and vowed about it in defending Nnamdi Kanu and IPOB members. No matter whatever it will take me, even if it will cost my life, because I know that they committed no offense known to Nigerian law. They are the oppressed people of Eastern States. So I must proceed with my professional careers and also defend them effectively within the best of our ability. But that actually informed the reason why my house was violently invaded by the agents of the state. But I must follow this case to its logical conclusion.
So I understand you have sent a petition to the Speaker of the National Assembly. What has come of that petition and what are you seeking from the Speaker?
I have not only limited my petition to Speaker National Assembly, I've also extended petition to Governor of Anambra State and also Speaker House of Assembly Anambra State, and also extended petition to U.S. Embassy in Nigeria, UK Embassy in Nigeria, EU, United Nations, and the foreign institutions who are very keen watching the atrocity going on in Nigeria. I'm expected, and also I crave the indulgence of the Speaker and the authorities I submitted letter to prevail on the Nigerian government, particularly the Anambra State government, to set up a full judicial panel inquiry to investigate the carnage, the bloodletting, the atrocity that took place in my house on the 2nd of December 2019. It needs to be investigated, because it's only when that is done that the intention of the masterminders will be unraveled. I can't understand what transpired. I've never witnessed such thing in my life, that a lawyer in my class will be house, home, will be invaded in such manner, bloody manner, people murdered in their primes, houses destroyed in their numbers, in search of me. I've never seen, and I don't know which offense I committed to deserve such terrible treatment from the state. So I am only craving indulgence of the Speaker and also Anambra State government and the foreign government and those institutions to prevail on the Anambra State government to establish, to set up a full panel of inquiry to investigate the incident of 2nd of December 2019, because as it stands today, police is an interested party. They carried out this, they carried out the attack on my home, killed people there. So as such, they are not in a position to investigate any, conduct any form of investigation in the respect of the matter. So that is actually why I'm seeking, craving indulgence of the 11 agencies and authorities I petitioned to prevail on the state to set up a committee of inquiry that can investigate what transpired in my house.
Ifeanyi Ejiofor is the lead attorney for Nnamdi Kanu, leader of the indigenous people of Biafra or IPOB. He spoke with me from Awka, Anambra State in Nigeria. The Malawian Public Affairs Committee says it will continue with efforts to find ways to resolving the country's political tension. According to Robert Feary, Chief Executive Officer of the Public Affairs Committee, or PAC, the group is engaging with all stakeholders as citizens await a court decision over the disputed presidential election. By the opposition, United Transformation Movement, or UTM, led by former Vice President Dr. Salo Chilima, says it will not engage in peace talks until the court ruling. For more on the effort to resolve the political tension, I reach Robert Feary, Chief Executive Officer of the Public Affairs Committee, or PAC.
The Public Affairs Committee, with its mediation, has further engaged the head of state at the State House, where we gave him a report in terms of what had transpired from the meetings we held with United Transformation Movement, Malawi Congress Party, as well as a chairperson. So having met the head of state, we needed to go back to the concerned parties to convey the response which we got from the head of state regarding the dialogue process.
Now, so what has been the response so far from them after conveying the response from the government or the head of state?
There is a general consensus in terms of respecting the outcome of the court. I think all the parties do recognize the importance of preparing the minds of Malawians in terms of the outcome of the court, either way it comes, because it remains a tricky situation, whichever way the court can make a determination. Secondly, the parties do respect the dialogue process, but with the conclusion of the matter in the court, whereby the court will be pronouncing the ruling next year, there were various responses or outcome out of the meeting. There was a feeling by some that perhaps we have to wait for the court ruling. Then from there we can determine in terms of what could be the agenda as regards the dialogue, which is generally respected and welcome in the current political situation.
Is the major concern being that the UTM, the United Transformation Movement, saying that it will not participate in any dialogue until the court ruling? Is this what you were referring to?
Well, the way the UTM had given us a response, my understanding is that exactly what you are saying, that they believe we have to wait for the court ruling. That's the UTM's position. For the Human Rights Defenders Coalition, they urged PAC if we could work hard to make sure that the dialogue takes place before the court ruling. So what I can say at the moment, as mediators of Public Affairs Committee, they will have to convene and review the meetings and see how best we can forge ahead based on recommendation that still dialogue is required prior to court ruling. We do respect both responses from the stakeholders, because they had different emphasis in terms of what were the issues which needed to be clarified first to the principals.
Do these feedbacks that you've gotten from all these groups or stakeholders thwart or frustrate your efforts to try to resolve the political tension in the country?
Not at all. I can answer that emphatically. Not at all. There is no frustration at all because of the following reason. The dialogue we are talking about has to be understood in context. First, the HRDC did not go to court as a complainant on the presidential election case. They are really more from the civil society point of view in our discussion. In which case, when we are talking about a dialogue, this has to be understood at different levels. You can have a dialogue with the head of state and the HRDC. It's a possibility. I'm not saying that's what is going to happen, but that's a possibility. Then you can have dialogue which can take place with those who are representing the major political parties, the two who have gone to the court. That's another arrangement. In all these arrangements, all possibilities are there. Should it be the case that a party completely doesn't want a dialogue as of now, that does not necessarily frustrate, because the main foundation of the dialogue for us is not to discuss the underlying issues, namely issues which have come out, like electoral reform, constitutional review report, issues of corruption and the like. You can't discuss those within a short period of time. But you can have dialogue where you can prepare Malawians to accept court rulings by having a symbolic gesture where you can discuss preliminary in terms of how you can handle the court ruling. So dialogue is not necessarily focusing on court matters. That has to be made clear.
Robert Feary is the Chief Executive Officer of the Malawian Public Affairs Committee, or PAC. He spoke with me from the capital, Lilongwe. And you are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington, D.C. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. But first, the Algerian Electoral Commission says former Prime Minister Abdelmadjid Tebboune is the official winner of Thursday's presidential election, receiving 58% of all votes cast. Voter turnout, however, was low, and many Algerians say they will continue their protest against the government. For VOA, Edward Uranian has more from the Egyptian capital, Cairo.
Large crowds of protesters turned out in the capital, Algiers, Friday, despite word from the country's electoral commission that former Prime Minister Abdelmadjid Tebboune won a resounding victory in the presidential election. Commission head Mohamed Sharfi gave the official figures. He says that preliminary results show that Abdelmadjid Tebboune won 4,950,000 votes for a total of 58.15% of all ballots cast. Sharfi said second place finisher Abdelkader Bengrina captured 1.5 million votes, or 17% of those cast. Official figures put voter turnout at 40%, although many analysts said the real number was probably much lower. Paul Sullivan, a professor at the U.S. National Defense University, tells VOA that it is not clear where things might be heading in the post-election period, but that many Algerians are not pleased by the results.
Where we might be heading from now, I hope, is not toward violence. But Algeria has a history of violence related to elections. The people of Algeria seem to be saying, with the low turnout, that they don't believe in how these elections are run and that their voice is not being listened to.
Sullivan added that the length of the new president's tenure will reflect how well he listens to the voice of the Algerian people. Algeria's protest movement opposes the predominance of the ruling elite in governing the country since independence from France in 1962. Algerian analyst Ammar Benjedda told Arab media that the new president must offer some sort of concession to the protest movement, because if there is no national consensus, he won't be able to accomplish anything. Benjedda added, however, that he thinks Tebboune understands the critical situation and the need to make a gesture toward the protest movement. A picture posted on social media showing Tebboune chatting with Army Chief of Staff General Ahmed Gaid Salah while sharing a cigarette caused some Algerians to question the new president's close ties to the military. General Salah is widely thought to be the most powerful man in Algeria. Tebboune maintains, however, that he hopes he is supported by the people and that he ran as an independent despite the fact he belongs to the largest political party in the country. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
I African prosecutors and investigators say they need more training and skills to be able to arrest and prosecute nimble human traffickers who often stay one step ahead of them. They made their call as the African Union estimates that poverty paves the way for 3.5 million Africans to be trafficked for forced labor, sexual exploitation, and other acts of slavery. For the UAE, Eugene Uwimana has more from the Rwandan capital, Kigali.
New technologies and persuasive promises of better opportunities for naive victims are among the contributing factors which bring perpetrators closer to their targets. Zidane Bathu is a prosecutor from Mauritius.
The main challenge is that criminals are one step ahead of prosecution, mainly because they evolve faster than we do. As an organized criminal activity, they are always on the move to look for new ways to avoid detection and arrests.
African investigators say the shortage of technical skills to investigate and follow traffickers makes their case fail while victims keep being sold silently.
Most of our cases fail at the point of investigation. So you find that even as a prosecutor, you're going to court with a case that hasn't been properly investigated. So it becomes a challenge even on how to go about prosecuting such a case.
John Edozi, international advisor of AGA, the American Attorney General Association, says African leaders need to urgently address this problem because many countries are open to exploitation.
Many African countries are prone because of poverty. People are lied to. The perpetrators of these crimes, they lie to the poor people in the society. They take advantage of the poor people. And we see a lot of it from region to region.
Rwanda Prosecutor General Imabri Havugiyaremye says prosecutors and investigators also need to be trained on how to carry out joint international intelligence because perpetrators transit neighboring countries.
Mostly it's about training investigation, training on investigation techniques. There will be also how they can cooperate, countries they can cooperate, how prosecutors and investigators can cooperate in terms of intelligence, in terms of investigating those crimes. So in general, that would be the purpose.
The Rwanda Investigation Bureau, RIB, says it has recorded more than 189 human trafficking cases over the last 5 years. Last year alone, RIB recorded 49 cases involving 80 victims, 78 suspects apprehended, and 25 victims rescued and repatriated to their respective countries. The United Nations Office on Drugs and Crime, UNODC, worldwide report for June indicated that the most common form of human trafficking, 79%, is sexual exploitation, with victims predominantly being women and girls. Eugene Uwimana for VOA News, Kigali, Rwanda.
The United Nations Children's Fund, or UNICEF, says the number of children whose births are officially registered has increased significantly worldwide, but 166 million under the age of 5 remain unregistered. For VOA, Mavis Ochery has more from the Ghanaian capital, Accra.
The report titled Birth Registration for Every Child by 2030, Are We on Track? Seeks to analyze data from 174 countries. Released by UNICEF on its own 73rd birthday, the report shows that the proportion of children under 5 registered globally is up around 20% from 10 years ago, increasing from 63% to 75%. Mohamed Fall, UNICEF Regional Director for Eastern and Southern Africa, says the need for a birth certificate is linked to the right to an identity that assures children of access to services such as education, health, and protection. He says policymakers provide services needed throughout children's lives, so they should know who is born in their countries to create the right policies to safeguard them. Fall says countries like Ethiopia, Malawi, Chad, Zambia, and Zimbabwe are below the threshold of registering 50% of children after birth, while Kenya, South Africa, and Namibia have exceeded that threshold. He says some countries were recording low number of birth registrations because of the excessive centralization of services.
Services sometimes are far away from the beneficiaries and those who need the certificate. Sometimes services would also require cost that parents cannot afford. Sometimes services are so not integrated to other services that could have facilitated access to the identity. I was thinking about health services. Sometimes also it could be lack of awareness on the importance of the document among parents or community.
Fall says UNICEF works around the clock with other partners and governments to address these issues. He says the proportion of children registered for birth certificates has gone up, driven by South Asian countries, particularly Bangladesh, India, and Nepal.
Unfortunately, in sub-Saharan Africa, still is having only 20% of children having the birth certificate, and only 40% of the children born in the continent are registered at birth.
Fall expressed concern over the lack of political will by African governments and the absence of the right policies to address the issue. Reporting for the VOA, I am Mavis Ochery in Ghana.
And right now it's time for music from our African collection. You're hearing from Nilante with the newly released Champion. Dibanj follows with Be With You, Juliana Kanyamozi with I'm Still Here, Mbozo with Hodari, and then Nawal Al Zugbi ends with El Layali.
That is in front of me to overcome the situation. Remain positive when I see that fence surrounding me. I'll hold on to my vision. I no go think negative. I no go fear. Mountains in front of me. Me, I go reach my destiny. Yeah. I go in. I go hammer, go in. I and I must dare. Overcome my fear. Goodness and mercy follow me. I go in. I go hammer, go in. Ooh, I am champion. Every day,
every day.
At the end, I go count my money. Slowly build a reputation. There'll come a better day. I cannot fail. Do what I have passed, eh? I have made my decision.
Yeah.
Keep on forcing, just like Cabo, fighting each other down there.
Yeah.
wanna be with you. Now the way you they do it, they make me the see. Say I want to the be with you. I just wanna give you good love. No cussing over, baby, come over, stay over. And I'll give anything, and I'll do anything. I'ma go down, go down, go down, go down. If you're down, I'm down, we are down, so go down. Now the way where you do me is so, now the way you do me. See the way that you do what you do to me, girl, that makes me wanna be with.
Through the fire, I'm still here. Shombe mtoto laini laini anawaka waka ah, wanga wape vidongi nimebaini baini wanatapatapa ah, mina wepaka kiyama tuombe uzima waroke kwa kuchutama na wasimame wima kamwe watopata mwanya habisi fitina wapike mabilinganya situtoke dina nalegea ukintazama yako macho Toto hodari, hodari wa mapenzi, jamani hodari, hodari wa mapenzi, kwa mchezo ya chumbani, hodari, hodari wa mapenzi, kutandani, hodari, hodari wa mapenzi. Katoto Makiri kiri, kuni washaka pipiri Fundi haswa mikifiri, unipanilewe Kwasa kwasa ndani pingiri Za kukata saga kachiri Nani haswa unafikiri, kama siowewe Nichezeshe kidaru sosi kwa manane Yanga, nikande kipanda uso tuunikane Kanga, nipitishe bodala uko tukakuta Ni wao puto wasijichanganye watapasuka nalegea ukintazama yako macho nalegea ikigusana yangu na yako katoto hodari hodari wa mapenzi jamani hodari Hodari, hodari wa mapenzi Uo ya hodari, hodari wa mapenzi Mama kuki hodari, hodari wa mapenzi Mwote, hodari, hodari wa mapenzi Jaiopa, hodari, hodari wa mapenzi Jai mama tifa, hodari, hodari wa mapenzi Mwes makani, hodari
تاني حب قلبي من جديد بعد غيبة جاني رح نداني خلى عمري كله عيد الليالي رجعت لي تاني حب قلبي من جديد بعد غيبة جاني رح نداني
That was music from the continent. We hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of The Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, Managing Editor Shaka Saleh, Reporter Douglas Mpoga, Producer Said Hamdoun, and our engineer for today, Desta Wondirad, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, the heart of the wise man lies quiet like limpid water. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington. Good evening, Africa.
This is VOA News.